Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hello, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet, one person at a time. And wow, I just love radio. These video recordings that we're doing create such an incredible synchronicity in my life. And this, it happens every time. And sure enough, we have the same thing. So I have this beautiful guest today, Bridget Gaspard. She wrote this amazing book called The Final Eighth, which lined up into my life in some crazy synchronicity that I'll tell you about when we get talking. But you know, what is the final eighth? Like, have you ever gotten almost all the way to your goal and then somehow you couldn't quite cross the finish line? This is what Bridget has called getting 7/8 of the way there. And how do we get that final eighth? How do we get that sort of completion so we can cross the finish line and complete the goals that we've set out to do? And according to Bridget, in her deep wisdom, in her amazing book, she talks about how it's learning to talk to our inner selves that can be the answer. So welcome, Bridget. Thanks for being here today with me.
Oh, such a pleasure. I'm looking forward to our talk.
Oh, me too. And let's just to give the audience a little background on our conversation. How can we start explaining the final eighth in these the parts work that you're doing?
So the final eighth literally came to me with watching clients that I knew had worked so hard, dedicated, talented, hardworking. So that was not the problem. And then they would get close to their goals and they would suddenly stall. And it was a mystery. I didn't know why. They didn't know why. And they were so frustrated. And it was across the board. I work with creative types. I work with lawyers and bankers. And this phenomenon kind of came out whole, like the name for it. And it didn't matter what the person was in terms of gender, age. It was about a cherished goal. And suddenly it was like the universe said yes, and they stalled. And so I began to realize that's because parts of you are for the goal. And those parts are familiar. They work hard. They get you there, but not all the way. Because then you run into other parts who are actually scared of crossing the finish line or have some very wise and important reasons. They're not the problem. They're like the way to look at what's happening. And I do this work called voice dialogue, which is where we talk to different parts of ourselves and get the wisdom of both. So using that work, I began to realize this was a way in, including, to be honest, sometimes giving up the goal. Sometimes it really wasn't the right thing at the right time.
Right. Yeah, I was introduced way back in the 80s to this idea of parts work when I studied a psychological model called psychosynthesis. And that's, talking about these different parts of us that we live inside of us that, and then as I moved on in my career, I became pretty fluent in the archetypes that, you know, Carl Jung talks about archetypes and more recently, and quite brilliantly, Carolyn Mace too is talking about archetypes. And so what you're saying is that there can be conflicting parts of us. Like there, we're not always in agreement because we're very complicated, right? Is that what you
exactly.
mean?
Exactly. We think we want our goal with every fiber of our being, but what we find out is that not every part of us wants it. And we usually end up having negative labels. That, you know, I don't know what happens. I just get stuck or I get forgetful. And the way I would look at it is, well, a forgetful part comes up and makes you basically in the way that it functions, not do the actions that are necessary. And if you talk to that part and just listen to its point of view and not try to change its mind, you'll often hear what really is the key to unlocking the mystery. So like a forgetful self, I might go say, well, let's talk to that forgetful self. And so we'll move over and we talk to Bridget in the third person. So this makes more separation and the book guides people through this. But the forgetful part might say something like, I'm terrified that Bridget's not going to be able to handle more responsibility. Look how she forgets now. And so then maybe the goal is, well, how do we set up the foundation so that you have more and better systems in place to handle your next step of growth? That in fact, the focus should be on building your foundation and not whatever that is. And then often very quickly, people cross their final eighth.
Mm. Right. And for until we start doing this kind of work, those parts are in operation kind of in our subconscious, right? We're not,
absolutely.
They're operating, they're sort of sneaking out sideways. And in that case, like in the case you're talking about doing some sabotage or just kind of halting the process in a very subconscious way. And we don't understand because it's operating underground. And it sounds like the work you're doing is to bring that out of the subconscious and into the conscious mind where we can work through it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also the discomfort of being so close and not there, whether it's frustration or even shame or guilt. I like to say that discomfort is there to tell you there are parts underground. It's actually a flashlight in and of itself, because it's so liberating and a little scary to deal with these parts directly, but they're running the show right now if you're really not able to move forward. And so let's just meet them and be curious.
Yeah. So I was just telling you before we started the broadcast that I do this business training for healers, for psychics, and that we were working on these, the inner child, the critic, the victim, prostitute, saboteur, and the addict. And I use them. Carolyn Mace talks about some of them as the survival archetypes that everyone has, or parts that everyone has. And I certainly see those. Do you think that we all have the same parts, or do we have some of the same and some different?
I think the classic archetypes, I do believe we all have those. However, whether they're primary in our life or hidden, that changes. And sometimes people's archetypes shift depending on their developmental phase, like what's more primary. And then personally, I do think that you can spring up a self. For example, if someone gets an inheritance, maybe that's the first time there was money to care about. And so suddenly there are these selves that care about money. So I also think that depending on the life of the person, individual selves can appear that maybe weren't necessary or desired prior.
Right. Yeah. So it's not set in stone. Like you have a certain amount, they never change and they can evolve depending on what we're doing and what phases of our life that we're in. So I have a theory that I want to run by you, and I want to know what you think about it. I noticed that because I do a lot of inner child work with my clients, and that to me, the inner child seems like it's at the bottom of a lot of the sabotaging things we do. And my theory is that the inner child enlists the other archetypes, like the victim, prostitute, saboteur, to protect it. You know, so when the inner child, the inner self is afraid of success or afraid of the attention that you're going to get, or afraid of whatever newness is coming down the road, that it, that these other ones stand in front of the child to protect it. What do you think about that?
I 100% agree. And so that's part of the process, is finding out, well, what's going on? Because it's true. And these little parts, they need protection. And so if you unconsciously default to whatever parts of you are your natural protectors, then you're also not having conscious choice. You're just doing the default archetypes that come up when fear rises. So that's the other thing. It's like you start to be able to get control over what's the preferred archetype given the goal.
Right. Because when you get conscious of them, you can like consciously shift, right? So if you're being very, if you're taking care of the tender parts that need attention, then you, and you're like caretaking and loving up on those parts, then you can make a conscious decision to shift into an archetype that's more aligned with what your goal is, perhaps.
Exactly. And sometimes I'll say, you know, you have to put your wounded child, or even the magical ones, but the soft little ones, like aside. Sometimes if like you have to go to a very important meeting and you need your diva, prostitute, negotiator, but you can internally imagine those little ones with their favorite babysitter having their wonderful snack so that they're loved and protected. I worked with a client a long time ago who was in danger of losing her job because she was acting out. And I first asked, do you want to keep the job? Because I'm not going to support someone. We have to find out. Yes, she did. Well, she kept bringing her wounded acting out 8-year-old boy who had a trauma background to her. And of course we can mix genders with ourselves. Right. And so we literally worked on her making what she called a fake self. And I said, if fine if that's what you have to call her, but your boss doesn't want to deal with your wounded 8-year-old. Like, you're at this job, you want to keep it, so you need to literally bring other parts to this adult arena.
Right.
And it also, she had such fun calling it her fake self that it actually really empowered her. And so I always start where people are, because she would laugh and say, oh, Bridget, you'd be so proud of me. I was so fake today. But really, for her, that meant she was bringing in some adult selves where they belonged, and not the 8-year-old.
That's great. Yeah, I think probably a lot of us get into trouble because we're sort of an inappropriate part of us shows up at work or in family meetings. And, you know, like you walk back into your parents' house and you're as an adult and you're immediately like 6 years old again, you know, and if you know that's going to happen, you can maybe choose another more powerful archetype or one that will have more fun in that circumstance anyway.
Exactly. And that's freedom, because you can't change the other people, but you can change yourself.
Right. I love the message in your book that, because it's so loving, it's so inclusive. It's, we don't get rid of these parts. We can't like surgically remove them, right? We have to integrate them. So tell us a little bit about how that goes about. How do we do that?
So once you realize that every single self, no matter how dysfunctional it may actually be in terms of its behavior, literally is out to protect you. And that's true with any self. And so as you dialogue with different selves, you learn their history. And what happens is, as a side effect, you just get more compassion. It's not anything I tell anyone that they have to do, because that could be a self, like what we call the spiritual pusher or something. You need to be compassionate and all forgiving. Well, that's probably a self, because a lot of selves have rules. And that's one way you can tell, is that just the bigger picture, or is that a self telling me, you know, one more type of to
right.
do?
That's so good. Yeah. So yeah, it might be hard to tell the difference between the truth and a self, right?
Yes, exactly. And that's, again, part of the consciousness where you're like, well, let me check. Let me feel into that. And so if the integration happens because you realize you're all on the same team. And part of my book literally has a few ideas of how you can update some of yourselves and give them roles that are actually esteem filled. So if you have certain large archetypal energies that are astounding, but you don't really have a place in your life for that kind of amazing energy, you need to find a place to put it. Like, that's not the part of yourself that wants to make to balance your checkbook. And right. so a lot of times we have our parts doing this work that's not like designed for their energy and level. And then you have other parts who just want to do the systems and they love the data points. And that's like, that's the part of you that needs to sit down every other Saturday and just do your books.
Yeah. And I think the beautiful, one of the beautiful messages in your book too, is that we, every one of these selves is as dysfunctional or irritating as they might seem to be, actually have a gift for us. They're giving us something powerful. They have a light side to them. And once we understand what the gift is, sometimes the inner conflict goes away, right?
It melts. Exactly. It's like, oh, okay. Often it's just like, I just have to get it. Now I get it. Like, it literally melts. And I can see it. I'm sure you do too when you work with people. The resistance just disappears sometimes.
Yeah, and they have a lot of wisdom, these selves. So they may be telling you something that's really like arising out of your soul or arising out of a deeper part of you that you're not, your ego self isn't listening to in the moment.
Exactly. And my work is based on voice dialogue, which was developed by my mentors, Hal and Sidra Stone. And so that's the work that I continue. And the whole philosophy is, our healthy personality consists of many selves. So this is not trauma related, disassociative identity right. disorder, something like that. But that every self is connected to our vulnerability, which is where our unique essence is. And it's all part of the same. And so every self is related to our essence in some way, because that's where it all springs from.
And how do these selves get formed? They're formed really in our infancy, our childhood, right? But some are functional and approved of by our family and get sort of, you know, the stamp of approval, and some really don't. And they're the ones that go more into the shadow, right?
Exactly. I call them hidden selves, but they shadow or disown selves. So again, all of this is healthy. It's healthy bonding. An infant is born with a particular temperament, a particular household, and also parents that care about being good parents want to socialize their kids so that they are good, productive, wonderful members of society. So as a result, though, let's say the responsible, good girl parts are really reinforced. That means anger, dissatisfaction, irritability kind of go underground. Sometimes some people are so disconnected, they literally believe, I just don't get angry. Mm-hmm. And they're not lying. They're not accurate, but they're not lying. And right. So that's, and then if you truly disown your anger, talk about the gift, how are you going to get the energy to advocate for yourself, to build a business, bigger business, or even today with COVID and the shifting of society, anger is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And it's got destructive qualities if it goes out too far.
Right. Or if it sneaks out sideways, that's one of the ones that when it's, you know, I always call it the jelly donut theory. Like when you squeeze the donut, the jelly's coming out somewhere.
Yes.
and that's where it creates a mess in our life, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So I love that you brought up COVID, because I do think in your book you talk about how a crisis can sometimes be the sort of the initiation or the moment of change opportunity. It's a moment of opportunity for change for somebody. So how do these parts get stimulated when we're in a situation like COVID, and what's the opportunity?
And COVID is, of course, coming now in the social injustice and all the protests about it. But I always say, like brain plasticity, we have inner selves plasticity. And so people and families are confronted with diagnoses and things that they don't want, but they're also confronted with things they do want. Empty nest syndrome, becoming a grandparent. So these are different things where suddenly, yesterday I wasn't a grandparent and now I am, or a parent. And so then these selves come up because they're needed. And if you are conscious, you can cultivate them as well in terms of even the business planning that you help people with. It's like sometimes there's just got to be an invitation. Oh, I see. You don't know how to operate this, a particular part of your business. Okay. Well, then let's go get you some skills. Let's find the part of you that's a little bit, that can get some technology skills. And especially now, like people having to be better at Zoom and all of those things, I think there's a whole globe of people who never went near technology now at least have the basic skill, things like that.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah. So interesting. So sometimes what we think of as a crisis can sort of pop these parts to the surface.
Yeah.
So we can see them and I wouldn't say heal them, but at least bring them into our consciousness.
Exactly. And on some level, when we think about healing, I'm not so sure we use the traditional way of looking at it. There are parts of us that hold the truth of maybe rough things that happened or an illness that happened. And those parts, like you said, we're not going to get rid of them and they don't have to rule the show, but those are also tender parts that just remember, and that's okay. We can just be with them. That's right. Your leg was broken, you know, even if it's been a while, and that's the part that remembers that. And actually that some of the wisdom would be, so, you know, as you start your dance classes, just keep in mind that your knee isn't the same as it used to be, that kind of thing. And that's where you can use the wisdom. And it's not that you're healed or unhealed, but you can continue to grow while you're accepting reality on reality's terms.
Right. So let's talk about the wisdom of not getting your goals.
Do you mean like leaving them behind?
Yeah, like sometimes that happens. Like it's maybe, you know, it's not the right thing to do. How does that come about?
So I devote a whole chapter to that, to letting go, because I just really didn't want my book to be all about type A personalities saying, okay, which type A personalities will love this book, no doubt. But sometimes you're holding on to this final eighth. So really, it's still about a yearning. It's not quite being there. So letting go of the goal actually means also letting go of this dissatisfaction. So are you holding on to the goal because you don't want to feel the feelings that are going to come either way when you let go or when you succeed? Then you have a first eighth. Like, what am I going to do now? After someone wins the Olympics with a beautiful gold medal, they still have to come up with, well, what's next? Do I go back to the Olympics or whatever it is? Yeah. So I think some of it is a way to stop the avoidance behavior, or it's just past. It's not, it just doesn't fit anymore.
Right. I think our ego self gets really hooked on goals. You know, the ego part of the personal self, you know, is really like measuring ourselves in the terms of these goals or comparing or like really connecting our value to goals. Yeah. And that oftentimes it's not always in alignment with our higher self or our soul self. Your soul may have a really different agenda, and that giving up the ego goal may open space in your life for a deeper something that's more aligned to come through. I don't know. That happens for me. That's why I brought it up.
All right. I completely agree. And that would be one of the great gifts of letting it go. And as you just referred to, and it's probably emotionally going to be difficult. Like our egos, and we would look at those selves as selves also, they want us to be well and not vulnerable. But they think they have the whole picture, and they do not. And that ego, those cells were usually formed in the original household when it was very important you follow the rules, whatever they were. So now it's like different rules. And honestly, I have a lot of very sophisticated clients who whine when I say you got to give up your elementary school rules of success. And it's very painful. It's like letting go of that ego. Again, it makes you vulnerable. But within that, it's just extraordinary what can happen.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for writing this book. Now, I love it. I'm going to give it all to my students. And if people wanted to buy it, how can they find your book?
It's sold wherever books are sold. And I'm online, so you can look at finaleighth.com. Google my name.
There's the book right there on Amazon, so you can find it on Amazon. So you have a couple of websites, thefinaleighth.com.
Yes.
Yep.
And NewYorkVoiceDialogue.com, because Voice Dialogue is one of the main tenets of our group. And on Friday, the 25th of September, 2020, everyone is welcome. We're having a free virtual book launch event because we still can't meet in person. So that's on my website too. You have to RSVP, but it's free and that'll be fun. We're going to dive in with Tamar Stone, who is actually Hal Stone's daughter. So she also does the voice dialogue. And it's just so wild. It all comes out of psychosynthesis, which you talked about earlier. Yep. This wonderful work that just still, it came about in the 1920s and it's still living a century later. It's amazing. No,
it was so good for me in my early, I was super young when I was doing it. It was just sort of set the foundation for my work in such a beautiful way ever since then. So, gosh, well, thank you so much, Bridget Gaspard. Your beautiful book, The Final Eighth. Get it on Amazon, read it, and take it in because it's very powerful. But thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. What a pleasure.
And thank all of you guys for being here today. You can find me on my website, lisacampion.com. If you feel so inclined, I'd love for you to drop by and visit me there. And I'm just so appreciative that you're here with us today on The Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time right here on Empower Radio.